Hey there, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to tackle something that hits close to home, especially for us here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena. We're talking about the things that shape wealth and poverty right here in our corner of Southeast Houston and around the world.
Yeah, it's really interesting how these issues play out on both a global and a local scale. There's actually a lot we can learn from looking at the bigger picture.
Exactly. And to help us do that, we're using economist Thomas Sowell's book, Wealth, Poverty, and Politics, as our guide for this deep dive. And let me tell you, this book is a real eye-opener. It challenges a lot of common assumptions about why some places prosper while others struggle.
Yeah, one of the first things that struck me was how Sowell dismantles this idea that geography is destiny. You know, like the belief that having fertile land or tons of natural resources automatically means wealth.
Right. Like if you've got oil, you're set for life.
Yeah.
But Sowell argues it's not that simple.
Not at all. There are so many places that are rich in resources, but they just haven't been able to turn that into widespread prosperity. And then you've got places like Japan with limited natural resources that have become economic powerhouses.
So what's the missing piece? If it's not just about what's under your feet, what actually drives economic success?
Well, so it points to a few key factors, and one of the most surprising is this concept of cultural receptivity.
Okay, unpack that one for me. What does cultural receptivity even mean?
Think of it as a society's willingness to embrace new ideas, new technologies, new ways of doing things. It's about being open to change, learning from others, and constantly adapting.
So it's not about being stuck in your ways.
Exactly. So she used some fascinating examples, like how Japan in the 19th century during the Meiji Restoration actively sought out Western knowledge and technology. They sent students abroad, they studied different systems, and they weren't afraid to experiment and adopt what worked. And that openness to change played a huge role in their rapid modernization.
That makes me think about our own community here in Southeast Houston. We're a melting pot of cultures and backgrounds. Could that diversity actually be an asset for us if we approach it with this idea of cultural receptivity in mind?
Absolutely. Imagine if we as a community really embrace that diversity and we're open to learning from each other's experiences and knowledge and skills, we could create something truly special here.
It's like instead of seeing our differences as these dividing lines, we start seeing them as different pieces of a puzzle that when they're put together, make a stronger, more vibrant whole.
Exactly. And that ties into another key concept from Sowell, the importance of human capital.
Okay, human capital. We hear that term thrown around a lot. What does it actually mean in this context?
Think of it as the skills, knowledge, and habits that make people productive. It's not just about formal education, though. That's a part of it. But it's also about things like work ethic, problem-solving abilities, and even things like punctuality and personal responsibility.
So it's like the more human capital a community has, the more capacity it has to create wealth and solve problems.
Exactly. And here's where things get really interesting. Sowell argues that even education can sometimes create negative human capital.
Wait, negative human capital? How does that work?
Imagine an education system that focuses just on theory and abstract ideas, but doesn't really equip people with practical skills or respect for work that's seen as less glamorous, you know? Graduates might have fancy degrees, but lack the skills needed to actually contribute to the economy.
Oh, it's like having a toolbox full of screwdrivers when what you really need is a hammer.
Precisely. That mismatch between education and the real needs of the job market. It's something Sowell calls the mismatch problem, and it's something we see playing out all over, including right here in Southeast Houston. We've got to make sure our local schools and training programs are preparing people for the jobs that actually exist, not just handing out diplomas.
That's a huge point, especially for a show like ours that's all about empowering local residents.
Okay, so we've got cultural receptivity and human capital. What's the third big piece of the puzzle when it comes to understanding wealth and poverty?
Well, Sowell dives deep into the role of government. He argues that while the government definitely has a role to play, there are limits to what it can effectively do.
So it's not just about throwing money at problems.
No, not at all. He makes a crucial distinction between government actions that force or forbid certain behaviors versus those that can truly achieve those broader societal goals.
Okay, give me an example. Make it relevant to folks here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Well, think about something like affordable housing, a huge issue in our area.
Right.
The government can force landlords to charge lower rents through, you know, rent control. But that doesn't automatically mean there will be more affordable housing available. In fact, Sowell argues it can often have the opposite effect.
How so?
Well, if landlords aren't making enough profit, they might not maintain their properties or build new ones, right? So you end up with a shortage of decent, affordable housing, even with rent control in place.
So it's not enough for the government to just dictate outcomes. It has to create the right conditions for things like affordable housing to actually flourish.
Exactly. So Elwell argues that instead of focusing on just redistributing wealth, the government should prioritize policies that actually promote the production of wealth. Think about supporting small businesses, investing in infrastructure, creating a business environment that encourages innovation and job growth. Those things ultimately benefit everyone.
Now, that's a message I think a lot of folks here in Southeast Houston can get behind. We're a community that's built on hard work, entrepreneurship, and a belief in pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps.
And that's the kind of spirit that Sowell's book really champions, you know? He argues that while those external factors matter, ultimately it's the internal factors, the culture, the values, that human capital that truly determine a society's success.
Okay, so far we've covered some pretty big picture concepts: cultural receptivity, human capital, and the role of government. But Sowell also dives into some of the more nuanced and maybe even uncomfortable aspects of this topic, right?
He does, and one that really jumped out at me was his discussion of resentment and how it can actually be a barrier to economic progress.
Interesting. I usually think of resentment as a personal feeling, not something that impacts entire communities.
Well, Sowell argues that resentment can become a powerful social force, especially when it's directed at groups that are perceived as being more successful. It can fuel conflict, it can undermine cooperation, and it can even discourage people from trying to improve their own situation.
So it's like if you're constantly focused on what others have and feeling resentful about it, you're less likely to focus on your own growth and development.
Exactly. And this is something we need to be mindful of, especially in a diverse community like ours. If we want to see Southeast Houston thrive, we've got to find ways to bridge divides, build understanding, and celebrate each other's successes instead of letting resentment take root.
That's a powerful message, and it really gets to the heart of what we're all about here at Think and Act. Locally, creating a stronger, more vibrant community where everyone has the opportunity to succeed.
And that's precisely what Sowell's book encourages us to do, to think critically about these issues, challenge our assumptions, and find solutions that empower individuals and communities to create real, lasting progress.
This is already a lot to digest, but I feel like we're just scratching the surface. There's so much more to unpack in this book. You ready to keep diving deeper?
Absolutely. There's so much more to explore. Let's do it.
Right.
One of the things that really resonated with me, you know, reading through this is Sal's discussion of how we often confuse income with wealth.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. We
Yeah.
tend to just assume that a high income automatically equals a good life.
Right. But Sowell points out that it's wealth that provides that real financial security and long-term well-being, that accumulation of assets like property, investments, savings.
So it's not just about how much you make in a given year, but it's about how you manage and grow your resources over time.
Exactly. It's like the difference between having a full tank of gas and having a fuel-efficient engine. One gives you immediate energy, but the other helps you go the distance.
That's a great analogy. And it makes me think about how we talk about economic success here in Southeast Houston. Maybe instead of just focusing on attracting high-paying jobs, we should also be talking about how to empower residents to build wealth through homeownership, smart investments, financial literacy.
Absolutely. Those are the things that build lasting prosperity, not just a temporary boost in income. And speaking of things that last, Sowell also challenges this idea that progress is always linear.
You mean like once a society starts moving forward, it just keeps going up and up?
Right. But he argues that progress is actually much more fragile and that societies can experience periods of both advancement and decline. He uses the example of Black Americans in the 20th century who made significant gains early on, but then saw those gains erode, you know, with things like rising crime rates and family breakdown.
So what caused that shift? If progress isn't guaranteed, what can communities do to make sure they're moving in the right direction?
Well, Sowell argues it often comes down to a combination of cultural values and government policies. If a society starts to kind of de-emphasize things like hard work, personal responsibility, and the importance of family, it can create conditions that really undermine
It's
progress.
like a garden. You can't just plant a seed and expect it to thrive on its own. You know, you've got to cultivate the soil, you've got to water it regularly, and you've got to protect it from pests.
Exactly. And that's where the government comes in. So argues that while the government can't force prosperity, it can create an environment where prosperity is more likely to flourish.
So what kind of policies would that include? I know our listeners are always looking for actionable takeaways.
Well, So is a big proponent of things like lower taxes, less regulation, and a stable legal system. Basically, creating that kind of environment where businesses can thrive, they can create jobs, and generate wealth that ultimately benefits everyone.
Makes sense. It's like creating a fertile ecosystem for economic growth.
Exactly. And speaking of ecosystems, Sowell also has some fascinating things to say about population growth and how we often misinterpret its impact on wealth and poverty.
Oh, yeah. There's that whole idea that overpopulation is the root of all evil.
Right. But Sowell challenges that assumption. He argues that it's not simply about how many people there are, but about how productive those people are.
So it's not just about mouths to feed. It's about hands to work and minds to create.
Precisely. He points out that some of the most densely populated countries, like Japan and Singapore, are also some of the wealthiest, right? And conversely, there are sparsely populated regions that struggle with poverty.
So clearly, population density isn't the sole determinant factor. What does Sowell say is the key ingredient?
Productivity. If a society can produce enough goods and services to meet the needs of its population, then population growth isn't a problem. In fact, it can be an asset, as it leads to a larger workforce and a bigger market.
But if a society is unproductive, then even a small population can struggle.
Exactly. So the focus shouldn't be on limiting population growth, but on creating the conditions for greater productivity. And that brings us back to those key factors we talked about earlier: human capital, cultural receptivity, and a government that fosters innovation and entrepreneurship.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like if you're worried about having enough chairs for everyone at a party, you could either try to limit the number of guests or you can find a bigger room.
Right. And so Tolt argues that focusing on creating that bigger room, you know, expanding the pie of wealth through increased productivity, is ultimately a much more effective and sustainable solution.
Okay, so far we've talked a lot about those factors that promote economic growth.
Yeah.
But what about those darker aspects of wealth and poverty? Tolles doesn't shy away from those either, does he?
No, he doesn't. And one of the most insightful parts of the book, I think, is his exploration of those psychological and sociological factors that can actually create barriers to progress.
Like resentment.
Yes. But he goes even deeper, I think. He argues that sometimes the very efforts to address inequality can actually backfire and exacerbate the problems.
You mean like affirmative action or certain types of welfare programs?
Exactly. So argues that when you start treating people differently based on their group identity, it can create a sense of entitlement and dependency rather than fostering self-reliance and individual initiative.
So it's like instead of empowering people to climb the ladder, you're trying to equalize the rungs.
Precisely. And Sowell argues that this approach can actually be counterproductive. You know, it can create resentment among those who feel like they're being unfairly disadvantaged.
Yeah, and it can discourage those who are being helped from putting in the effort to succeed on their own merits.
Exactly. So Lowell's not saying that we should ignore inequality or pretend that systemic factors don't exist, but he's challenging us to think critically about the solutions that we propose and to consider those unintended consequences.
So what does he suggest as an alternative? If simply trying to equalize outcomes isn't the answer, what is?
Well, Sowell argues that the focus should be on creating a system where everyone has a fair shot to succeed, regardless of their background. He calls for a level playing field, where the rules are applied equally to everyone, and where success is determined by individual merit, not group identity.
Makes sense. But how do we get there? What are the practical steps we can take, especially here in Southeast Houston, to create that kind of environment?
Well, Sowell really emphasizes the importance of education that actually prepares people for the real world, not just theoretical knowledge, but practical skills, you know, and a work ethic that will serve them well in any field.
So less philosophy, more shop class.
Well, it's not about pitting one type of learning against another. It's about making sure that our schools and training programs are aligned with the needs of the job market, that they're equipping people with the tools that they need to build successful lives.
That's a huge takeaway for our community, I think. We need to make sure our schools are preparing our kids not just for college, but for the trades, for entrepreneurship, for whatever path they choose.
And it's not just about formal education, you know. It's also about fostering a culture that values hard work, personal responsibility, and delayed gratification. Those are the qualities that ultimately lead to long-term success.
It's like that saying, Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime.
Exactly. And Sowell argues that this principle applies not just to individuals, but to societies as a whole.
So if we want to see Southeast Houston thrive, we need to create a culture where people are empowered to fish for themselves, not just wait for someone to hand them a fish.
Precisely. And that means equipping them with the skills, the knowledge, and the values that they need to succeed.
I'm loving this conversation. It's like we're taking all these big abstract ideas and finding ways to make them relevant and actionable for our local community.
That's exactly what we're trying to do. And so Wall's work provides such a rich framework for thinking about these issues in a new way.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground, but there's one more big idea from the book I want to touch on. The concept of earned success versus unearned wealth.
Ah, yes. That's a crucial distinction.
Sowell argues that these are fundamentally different things, and it's important to understand why.
He uses the example of someone like John D. Rockefeller, who's often criticized for his vast fortune, right? But Sowell asks a provocative question. What did Rockefeller actually provide to others that caused them to willingly give him their money, ultimately leading to his wealth?
It's a question that forces us to kind of move beyond simplistic notions of greed and to consider the value that successful individuals and businesses actually bring to society.
Right. Rockefeller's wealth wasn't simply taken from others. It was accumulated by providing products and services that people valued and that they were willing to pay for.
Exactly. It's easy to criticize those at the top, but we have to acknowledge that wealth creation benefits everyone in some way. Think about the jobs, the innovations, the philanthropy that often come with earned success.
And that's a crucial point, I think, for our listeners here in Southeast Houston. If we want our communities to prosper, we need to create an environment that supports entrepreneurship and innovation, not one that demonizes success.
I completely agree. We need to celebrate those who create value, those who build businesses, those who take risks and create jobs. That's what drives economic growth and creates opportunities for everyone.
Absolutely. And Sowell's work reminds us that earned success is not something to be ashamed of. It's something to be celebrated and encouraged.
Now, I know Sowell can be a controversial figure. Some people accuse him of being too individualistic, of downplaying the role of systemic factors in poverty. What do you say to those criticisms?
Well, I think it's important to remember that Sowell's not saying that systemic factors don't exist or that discrimination and prejudice aren't real problems. What he's arguing is that focusing solely on those external factors can lead to a sense of victimhood and powerlessness.
So it's not about denying the challenges, but about focusing on what individuals and communities can do to overcome those challenges.
Exactly. Sowell believes that people have agency, that they have the power to make choices and to shape their own destinies. And he argues that the most effective solutions are those that empower individuals, not those that treat them as helpless victims.
I think that's a message that resonates deeply with our audience here in Southeast Houston. We're a community of doers, of people who believe in rolling up our sleeves and getting things done.
And Sowell's work provides us with a framework for doing just that. It's a call to action, you know, to think critically, to challenge the status quo, and to work together to create the kind of world we want to live in.
Now, before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to touch on one more important concept from the book, the importance of understanding the historical context of wealth and poverty.
Ah, yes. That's something we often overlook, I think. We tend to look at the world as it is today and assume that's always how it's been.
But Sowell reminds us that history matters, that the choices made by previous generations, the events that unfolded centuries ago, can still have a profound impact on the present.
He uses the example of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. That collapse led to centuries of economic and social instability across Europe.
It's a stark reminder, really, of how fragile prosperity can be and how quickly things can change.
And it's a reminder of how important it is to understand those historical forces that have shaped our world, both for better and for worse.
This historical perspective is particularly relevant for us here in Southeast Houston as we navigate the challenges and opportunities of a rapidly changing world. We're a community built by immigrants, by people who came from all over the world seeking a better life. Understanding their stories, their struggles, their triumphs can help us appreciate what we have and guide us as we build our own future.
Absolutely. History is not just about dates and battles. It's about understanding the human experience, the forces that shape our lives, and the lessons we can learn from the past to build a better future.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground today. From cultural receptivity to human capital, from the role of government to the importance of historical context, we've really dug deep into Sowell's thought-provoking ideas. But I know there's always more to explore. You ready to keep digging in part three?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
You know, as we're wrapping up this deep dive into Sal's book, I keep thinking about how so much of what he talks about comes down to this idea of personal responsibility.
Yeah, that's definitely a core theme, throughout his work, recognizing that while those external factors can definitely influence our lives, we ultimately have the power to make choices and to shape our own destinies.
And it's not about blaming people for their circumstances. It's
Yeah.
about empowering them to take ownership of their lives and to strive for something better.
Exactly. And it's about recognizing that true progress comes not from handouts or government programs, but from individual initiative, hard work, and a commitment to self-improvement.
So it's like instead of waiting for someone to rescue you, you learn to build your own lifeboat.
Exactly. And that ties into another important point that Sowell makes, the role of culture in shaping economic outcomes. He argues that certain cultural values are more conducive to success than others.
Okay, this is a tricky topic, but it's important to address. What are some of the values that Sowell sees as being essential for economic progress?
Well, he really emphasizes things like hard work, thrift, delayed gratification, strong work ethic. Cultures that embrace these values tend to be more prosperous because they create that foundation for individual initiative, for investment, for long-term planning.
And conversely, cultures that emphasize like immediate gratification or a sense of entitlement, they tend to struggle more.
Yeah. It's not about judging or condemning any particular culture, but about recognizing that certain values and behaviors are more conducive to economic success than
It's
others.
like if you're constantly focused on what you can get right now, you're less likely to invest in your future or to make sacrifices that might pay off down the road.
Exactly. And that's something we need to be thinking about, especially here in Southeast Houston. We're a diverse community, and we need to find ways to promote a shared set of values that will empower everyone to succeed.
Okay, so we've talked about personal responsibility, cultural values, the role of government, the importance of human capital. There's so much packed into this book. As we wrap up, is there one, overarching message that you think Saul is trying to convey?
I think at its core, Sowell's work is a call for clear thinking, for challenging assumptions, and for recognizing the complexity of these issues. He's urging us to move beyond simplistic solutions and to really grapple with those nuanced realities of wealth, poverty, and the forces that shape them.
It's about looking beyond the headlines, beyond the slogans, and really understanding those root causes of these problems.
Exactly. And it's about recognizing that there's no magic bullet, no one-size-fits-all solution. What works in one context might not work in another.
So it's about being adaptable, being open to new ideas,
Yeah.
and constantly learning and evolving.
And it's about empowering individuals and communities to take ownership of their own destiny, rather than waiting for someone else to come along and fix things for them.
I love that. It's a message of hope, of agency, of possibility. It's about recognizing that we all have a role to play in creating a better future, both for ourselves and for our communities.
And that's a message that's particularly relevant, I think, for our listeners here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena. We're a community that's built on hard work, resilience, and a belief in the power of individual initiative.
And Sowell's work gives us a roadmap for channeling that spirit into real, lasting progress.
I couldn't agree more. It's a reminder that we're not just passive observers of the world around us. We're active participants in shaping our own future. And that's an incredibly empowering message.
This deep dive has given me so much to think about, and I hope it's done the same for our listeners. And if you're feeling inspired to take action to make a difference in your own life or in your community, that's fantastic. Remember, change starts with each one of us.
Absolutely. And if you're looking for more resources or want to continue this conversation, be sure to check out the show notes on our website at thinkandactlocally.com. We've got links to Sowell's book, as well as some discussion questions and other resources to help you kind of delve deeper into these ideas.
And as always, if you're finding value in our show and want to support our mission of empowering residents of Southeast Houston, consider becoming a supporter at thinkandactlocally.com/donate. Your contributions help us keep the show going and allow us to continue providing you with in-depth analysis and actionable information for local impact.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep thinking, keep learning, and keep making a difference in your community. We'll see you next time.